making our way through Monday morning after a fairly busy weekend. Lots of different things going on. But one of the things that happened late in the weekend, it was just after supper time last night that Parks Canada issued a wildfire emergency advisory alert for Prince Albert National Park. So this is not great. The Buell wildfire is about 40 kilometers from the town site of Waska Sioux. Of course, a popular summer destination. Right now, the public is being asked to avoid travel to the area, advising anyone who's in the area able to leave, asking them to do so. And residents and visitors that are there and staying there, they're asking that they be prepared and ready to evacuate at any time. So we'll be digging into this story a little bit more tomorrow, but that's the news in one of the latest communities compromised by wildfire. Well, if you remember back April of 2020, not that long ago, Canada woke up to one of the darkest moments in our country's history as a lone gunman disguised as an RCMP officer driving a replica RCMP cruiser went on a 13-hour rampage across rural Nova Scotia, killing 22 people. The tragedy left the nation in shock, a plethora of unanswered questions, and even now, 5 years later, questions surrounding why the public wasn't warned sooner. How did the killer evade police for so long? What can the RCMP and police learn from their response? A former investigative journalist, Paul Pelengo, is hoping to answer some of those questions for the families and the friends of the victims. He has spent years, basically since this occurred, digging in and digging for the truth. He put together his first book on the tragedy called 22 Murders back in 2022. The book became a number one bestseller. Since that book's release, the Canadian Mass Casualty Commission issued its report in 2023. So now, in his follow-up book, which came out just this past month, Anatomy of a Cover-Up, The Truth About the RCMP and the Nova Scotia Massacres, he hopes to dive even deeper. He joins us now to discuss what he has found in his investigative work and how he hopes to get justice for victims, for families, and ultimately for Canada. Paul Pelengo is joining us, retired investigative journalist. Paul, thank you so much for taking the call.
Well, thanks, Evan, but I'm not retired. I'm still doing it.
You're still doing it. Okay. I thought maybe you were, this is now kind of your hobby, part of your life.
Well, it sort of turned into a 5-year, very intensive hobby so far, and it's going to continue on, it looks like, because we're still digging to find the answer and uncover what happened.
So is this
what
just
really happened?
I was just going to say, this is just your nature. Through your career, you're an investigative journalist. Why was this interesting to you? Was there something that piqued your interest early on that made you dig into this?
Well, based on my knowledge of the RCMP and how things work, I suspected from the beginning that there was some kind of cover-up here because nothing was normal about the RCMP response. And nothing was normal about the government response because nobody ever came down on the RCMP for what was an epic failure in policing. And, you know, 5 years later, not one politician has gotten up on their hind legs and asked a question about what happened. In fact, they've just rallied around the RCMP. And I thought that was really odd that it was a cover-up. I have experience in looking at cover-ups in Canada, and I thought, I'm going to watch this one and see what they do. And Anatomy of a Cover-Up shows what they did to mask the real story.
So maybe just set the stage for us, if you can, Paul, of the difference of your two books. Because I was just talking recently with a friend of mine who read 22 Murders, your first kind of in this incident. And now you've got this second one. What's the big difference? How are the storylines different?
Well, the first one was basically my intention was to put on record all the names of everyone involved in all the scenarios. So when the Mass Casualty Commission sat, I would force them to deal with things that they weren't dealing with. And I wrote that book in 140 days, which is like writing a 2,000 word essay every day for 140 days.
Oh.
To get it out, it was published by Random House, went to number one. They had to deal with many of the scenarios in there. They then buried a lot of that information. And then Anatomy of a Cover-Up is going into the story and looking at the official narrative and taking it apart. I mean, basically the only thing that's true in the official narrative is 22 people died. But a lot of things were changed and covered up and manipulated and fabricated to basically make the RCMP look better than they were.
The work that you did, and it's an investigative piece of work to put together what you've got in this book, Anatomy of a Cover-Up. Obviously, a lot of that came through combing through the Canadian Mass Casualty Commission's report, correct?
Oh, absolutely. It's based on official documents. Mm-hmm. Like, when I'm describing the cover-up, I'm using their own evidence to show the story.
So can you give us some insight? We're chatting today with Paul Pelango, investigative journalist, author of the newest book, Anatomy of a Cover-Up, talking about the Nova Scotia massacre that happened back in 2020. Walk us through some of the things that might be contained in the report that you're taking issue with or saying, yeah, this is part of the problem.
Okay, one of the, you know, go right back to the initial incident on Saturday night, April 18th, 2020. The RCMP say Wortmann killed 13 people in the Portapique neighborhood and escaped through a road in the blueberry field that they didn't know about. I show that didn't happen. He didn't go through the blueberry field. He went right past them. But I also show how evidence was manipulated to make it look like he went through the blueberry field. Why is that important? It's important because it affects the timeline. If he didn't go through the blueberry field, then there's no way to explain who killed Corey Ellison, one of the victims in Portapique. And I had an ex-RCMP forensic person on my podcast last night, Dispersing the Fog, saying he believes the RCMP accidentally killed one of the victims, and that was part of the cover-up.
So can you give me a sense, even a little bit deeper, Paul, like this path that the suspect allegedly took, can you give us an understanding of how you can prove that it's not accurate?
Well, in the documents, one of the things is there was a rope across the road leading into the field where the Blueberry Field Road was, and that rope was up. There were two witnesses who testified to it. One was the owner of the house right next to it, and one was an RCMP staff sergeant who recalled the rope being up the next morning, which meant Wortmann couldn't have gone through there. And secondly, even if he did go through there, there was another witness who they discounted and buried, a guy named Dean Dillman, who was at the top of the blueberry field at 10:38, provably. I can prove that he was there the whole time, so there was no way that Wortmann could have gone that way. That's important because the RCMP's original story, the original timeline was Wortmann left the area by 10:35. But after they examined the phone of Corey Ellison, they found that Corey Ellison was alive at 10:40:12. That's when he likely died and got shot. Well, if Wortmann was gone by 10:35, who killed Corey Ellison? So then they came back with a new timeline that Wortmann left by 10:45 by the blueberry field. Well, Dean Dillman was there. The rope was up. Other things were there. He didn't go that way. It's quite clear he didn't go that way. Well, then that raises the question, if Dean Dillman was there at 10:38 and Corey Ellison was killed at 10:40, who did that? Because it likely wasn't Wortmann. He wasn't there.
Mm-hmm. Paul Pelango is my guest, investigative journalist, author of Anatomy of a Cover-Up, The Truth About the RCMP and the Nova Scotia Massacres. So this is a 13-hour-plus rampage. What do you think? You've studied this as much, if not more, than pretty much anyone other than maybe the experts that have been involved in some of the post-analysis. What was it about this case that had the RCMP unable to stop Gabriel Wortmann?
Well, I think, you know, there's strong evidence suggesting Wortmann was a police agent and that his life was under threat. I addressed that later in the book with one of his police friends talking about that very thing and how he was planning to fake his own death and maybe go into witness protection or get out of the problem he was in because he had been exposed. And the RCMP, knowing this, and also knowing about the shooting of Corey Ellison earlier in the night, were frozen and basically did not conduct a normal type of lockdown of the area. They were hoping to catch Wortmann before he got out of that county and basically smother the story. But he got out of the county the next morning and killed 9 more people. a very, very difficult situation. And people are, you know, people who support the RCMP say, oh, well, they were overwhelmed and he just got the drop on them. There's more going on there because, as I said, it was an epic failure in policing. And one of the things they did, Evan, as I show in the story, is that one of their own officers was killed the second day, Constable Heidi Stevenson. And I show, using the evidence, that 27 witnesses were around the scene where she was killed. And the official story they came out with during the Mass Casualty Commission is that Stevenson was involved in a gunfight with Werbin and fired 14 shots. I do not believe that happened. I cannot find a witness who can testify to that. And I think the RCMP desperately tried to make a hero out of someone who was a victim of her own force. She shouldn't have been there alone. After 19 people had been killed, she was alone in her car, because she didn't know, didn't understand how bad the situation was because her own force wasn't telling her.
So following this tragedy, of course, families of victims were asking for answers. There was a fairly large outcry. The government announced a public inquiry, which turned into the Mass Casualty Commission. What was the commission supposed to do, and did it serve its purpose?
Well, the commission was supposed to be looking at domestic violence. This was sort of the cover story, that domestic violence was the cause of all these things. And it's quite clear that wasn't the issue. They issued 130 recommendations. The most important was that the RCMP should not be involved in contract policing in the provinces outside of Ontario and Quebec. And that's been totally ignored by government, or the federal government, at least at this point, government of Nova Scotia, for example. But it is being picked up by other provinces. Alberta, BC is sort of moving that way. Saskatchewan is talking about a sheriff's service or instituting a sheriff's service to supplement the RCMP. So it's going that way, but it's a big issue.
Mm-hmm. What is it, if just to pull this out a little bit further, Paul, your thoughts on why the RCMP, because this has been a topic of conversation on my show actually over the last couple of weeks for something totally unrelated, but I've had my own frustrations with federal RCMP. What is it about contract policing that you think has passed by the RCMP?
Well, it's unsustainable. There are internal reports in the government showing that it's unsustainable because the world has changed. The RCMP has become sort of the Hudson's Bay store of policing. You know, it started in the 1870s, but it's no longer, the model no longer works in modern society. And one big change is people don't want to be moved around all over the country into largely rural settings with no social life and be, you know, subject to the whims of their superiors. It doesn't work that way. The country has become more urbanized, and the RCMP essentially has become, in the contract role, sort of the dicks from the sticks. They're not in big cities, so they're not in touch with all the things that are going on. But you hit on another important point, Evan, that a lot of the problems in small towns dealing with drugs and money laundering and all the organized crime stuff has to do with the lack of federal policing that the RCMP is not doing. And without strong federal policing that polices, you know, trans-provincial, transnational crime and cybercrime, well, we're open to all kinds of crime, and you can't leave that up to municipal police forces to deal with. That's not in their jurisdiction. They don't have the capability. RCMP should be a strong federal police force. Provinces should be in charge of their own police forces and hold those police forces accountable, because the provinces and municipalities can't do that now. They have no control over the RCMP.
Paul Pelengo is my guest. We're talking about his latest book, Anatomy of a Cover-Up, The Truth About the RCMP and the Nova Scotia Massacres. That's a big title. When you look at the title, Anatomy of a Cover-Up, you're talking about the RCMP. What has their response been to your books, including your first one and this one?
Well, the RCMP began a policy in 2008 after I did Dispersing the Fog, my book that year, to never engage me publicly, because they, you know, as the then commissioner Bill Elliott said in an email to members, you can't win in a debate with Mr. Pelengo about the RCMP, so don't engage him. And by doing that, based on the way the media works, they eliminate me from discussion. Therefore, the CBC and other outlets won't deal with me because the RCMP won't respond. So in my books, in the last, you know, 22 murders in this book, the RCMP has said nothing. But the mainstream media has said nothing as well. They've just ignored it because the RCMP badmouths me and says, oh, I'm a conspiracy theorist. Actually, I deal in facts. Mm. So the thing, Evan, you talk about the title. I'm writing a cover-up, and I'm pointing out that the RCMP may have shot one of the people. It should be, you know, 21 by Wertman and one likely by the RCMP. They fabricated a story about their own member being in a gunfight. They executed Wertman. Wertman was probably a police agent. That's been out there. I've been talking about it. And in 5 weeks since the book's been out and at number one on the sales lists across the country, number one or two, nobody has said boo. You know what that, you know, when somebody goes that quiet in Canada, what it means? It's true.
So let me end with this. We've only got a minute left, Paul, but yeah. What is your hope from this book? Best case scenario, what happens?
Well, I think we should get justice for Corey Ellison. You know, who killed Corey Ellison is a big thing that's being ignored right now. He was an innocent victim, I believe, shot by the Mounties. You know, I had a guy on Dispersing the Fog last night, 32 years in the RCMP, is an IDAN person. He says he does not believe the RCMP story and the MCC story. And secondly, that people wake up to the issues of policing in this country, that we need a strong federal police force. We need strong provincial and municipal police forces, not working under the RCMP, but in a tiered way so you have overlap. So people can, if one police force isn't responding, you can go to someone else. That's not how Canada works now. And to take political control away from the RCMP and other police forces. Police forces should operate under the rule of law and should not be politicized. And if you look, last point, if you look back at the problems in the RCMP, it goes back to 1984 when the commissioner was made a deputy minister in the government and served at the whim of the prime minister. That's not how policing should work. And all the problems with the RCMP can be pointed right back to that.
Paul, this has been a good chat. I appreciate you giving me some time this morning.
Anytime, Evan. I'm always here for you.
Paul Pelengo, who is an investigative journalist, again, author of the new book, Anatomy of a Cover-Up, which is on bookstore shelves now. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.